Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. I'm Ryan and I am so thrilled to welcome Rachel Harrison back to the podcast. It's simply not spooky season without a visit from Rachel, and this time we're chatting about her new horror novel, Play Nice. I love this book so much, and I'm just going to go ahead and read my staff pick review for you here. The only thing the world loves more than a beautiful, strong woman is her downfall. Cleo Louise Barnes' mother has died. She was an alcoholic, abusive mother who claimed their house was possessed. Cleo and her sisters were no contact with Alexandra for years before her death. Now, Cleo is curious. She and her sisters have inherited the possessed house, and Cleo, a stylist and fashion influencer, is set on fixing it up. Inside, she discovers an annotated copy of her mother's book, which her father forbade them all from reading. She also discovers a demon. In this chilling story, the young and beautiful Cleo must grapple with her own demons, both figurative and literal, and find the truth behind the quote-unquote crazy. Rachel Harrison's latest novel sunk its claws into my neck and dragged me into the shadows to drink down my fear, and when I finally emerged, I was covered in glitter and the world was calling me crazy. Play Nice is a brilliant and vibrant take on the classic haunted house novel. It pulses neon, it bleeds black, it pokes at bruises and reopens old wounds. It examines the way we perceive women, especially when they say things we don't want to believe or act differently than we want them to. Cleo is messy and chaotic and beautiful and sharp, and I love her, I love her, I love her. This is Rachel Harrison's best, scariest, most fun book yet, and it's going to stick with me for a long time. I couldn't put it down, and neither will you. This demon does not like to give up its favorite toys. If you haven't already, please snag a copy of Play Nice from Gibson's Bookstore. You won't regret it. Now, without further ado, let's move on to my chat with the incredible Rachel Harrison. Rachel Harrison, welcome back.
We're six for six, right?
Yeah.
I've been on the podcast for every book.
Every book. We've done it.
We gotta keep the streak going.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not a fall podcast without a Rachel visit.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Thanks for writing a book a year.
You're welcome. You have to, the effects of that are taking hold because it's just the way that the schedule works that in the fall, when I'm promoting the book that just came out, I'm in edits for the book that's coming out the next year. So, in addition to like being on the road and like doing events and stuff in the time that I have when I'm not running around, I'm editing the next book. So it takes a lot of focus, takes a lot out of me. I mean, the whole thing, I'm always like editing takes copy edits, but
yeah, all
the
of
whole
it
thing takes a certain level of focus. So,
yeah. And I can't even imagine like being that deep into the next book and having to remember what the heck you wrote in the previous one. You're like, that was a million years ago.
Yeah, it's always harder at the beginning. And then kind of when you get to, you're doing the events and you sort of get your sound bites down, then it gets a little bit easier. You're kind of like regurgitating. Like, so it's not like remembering what I was thinking about when I was writing the book. It's remembering what I said 2 weeks ago in Dallas, where I was like, oh yeah, that was a good thing to say about this. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, that was good. Write that down.
Yeah.
Save that. I mean, I do the same thing with hand selling. There are books that I hand sell that I'm like, if I didn't have this elevator pitch memorized, there's no way I could tell you what this book was about because I don't even remember reading it at this point. Like, it's crazy.
So you're such a prolific reader.
Do I read a lot? I've been really good this year on my story graph of writing at least something as a review immediately upon finishing it, just so that when I go to write the actual review, I can be like, oh yeah, that was this one. Because
what are you reading right now?
Oh my gosh.
Sorry, that's always the hardest question because you're like, it just goes out of your mind.
What even? So I just started the next Caitlin Starling book,
Okay.
The Grace Few Patient or something
Okay.
about Grace Few, which is very good. I'm reading a super, super, super early like PDF copy of Dennis Mahoney's next one, Dear Demon.
Oh, jealous. I love Dennis's work.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm enjoying that. And probably like 12 other things that I'm.
So you can read multiple books at once and keep them
Yeah.
straight.
Yeah, I have like, they're very location based. So I have like my audiobook for when I'm like driving or like doing chores or whatever. And then I have like my book that I read at bedtime. And then I have my book that I read on my break at work. And
Okay.
that's usually that's my limit for like active reading. And then sometimes I'll have ones that I just pick up randomly that I'm like, oh yeah, I'm like 100 pages into this. I should see what's going on. You know, I've been trying to read House of Leaves for a decade, but
That one you can pick up and put down.
Exactly.
That
Like,
one's fine.
where
That's
did I leave
designed
off?
for that because it's like, yeah. I would love to pick that one up again, but I would need like a month where I had literally nothing to do.
And that's the issue, is I want to put all of my focus into it and I
You can't.
can't. I
No.
just simply am not able to do that. So
No,
I'm
no.
like, ah, sorry, House of Leaves.
Yeah.
Someday, someday.
Someday.
I'm going to go on a reading retreat and that's the only book I'm going to
Yes.
bring and just be like, dedicate like a week to it.
That would be so fun.
That would be
A
fun.
reading retreat sounds so dreamy.
There was one apparently in New Hampshire over the weekend that we were all like, well, we want to
No one
all
told
do
me. Yeah.
that. But of course, we had this massive book festival in Concord, which was great. And also, like, took all of our mental capacity and physical capacity. And it was insane.
Chaos. Yeah.
But it was fun.
Yeah, that
I got to
sounds
see Nat
lovely.
Cassidy. He finally made it.
Oh, that's nice. Isn't he coming up again?
He was supposed to be.
Oh.
It's like three different times we had him like tentatively scheduled, and every single time something went completely awry and he couldn't do it. So I was like, finally we got him.
But it'll still be CJ and Clay.
Yes, and
Yeah.
Delilah S. Dawson
Okay,
is gonna
good.
come too.
Good.
So we'll have fun. It'll be a good time. But yeah. How's your book tour going? I know you're like insanely busy right now.
So I just had my last like official tour event
Nice.
on this past Wednesday that was in New Jersey. So last Friday, I got home and I was gone for about 10 days on the road. So, and not, I wasn't doing an event every single one of those days. The first week that it comes out, the first week of tour, you always do, or you try and do an event every night because then it helps for first week sales and all of that helps get the word out. So that week it was, 7 days in a row of an event every day. And then Dennis Mahoney kindly did back-to-back events with me because the first one sold
Nice.
out. So
Oh, nice.
that was really fun. And then I had 2 days at home and then I left and I was gone for 10 days. And I've been back for a little over a week now. And
Nice.
last Wednesday was my last like Play Nice event in Frenchtown, New Jersey. Just lovely Frenchtown bookshop. It's like so cute. And then this week on Tuesday, I'm at an event at the New York Public Library for Becky Spratford's Why I Love Horror
Oh,
with Clay
amazing.
McLeod Chapman and Victor LaValle and Grady Hendrix. And then Wednesday, I'm finally going out to the Twisted Spine, the new bookstore in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and doing an event with Sam Raveline for Galloway's Gospel. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I will be at New York Comic Con.
Oh
So,
my God.
I do Comic Con like every other year, every couple years, because it's such an overwhelming experience, but it's really, really exciting. And it's nice because I'm back in the New York City area that like when I'm done, I can just come home and
Just go home.
collapse.
I love that. I love that.
Oh man, I.
Yeah, it's total. I'm very grateful to be busy, and it feels good to be able to, like, because when you release a book into the world, you no longer have any control over it. You don't have any control over how it sells. You don't have any control over how people receive it. None of that. So, but you do have kind of control over how you react and how you feel. And it feels better to be out and be proactive than just like sitting around being like, oh my gosh, I just like ripped my heart out of my chest and sent it out into the world. So, and it's also like, so you feel like you have a little bit more control over the book than you actually do, because we have no, it's some semblance of control, the guise of control.
That totally makes sense. Also, New York Times bestseller.
Yeah,
Congrats.
that it was
Oh my God.
absolutely wild. Yeah, I'm very, it's very, very validating. So that's, but
I
it,
fully cried when we put your book because we have a display. I sent you a photo, but we have a
yeah.
display of all the bestsellers in the store and we rotate it every week. We update it every week. And I came in and I went, I had like celebrated online, but it
Yeah.
hadn't like processed, right? And then I came in on the day they were swapping out the books and I went, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, wait, wait. And I ran up to my coworker who was swapping the books out and I was like, is it Rachel's week? Is this the week? And she was like, yeah. And like she put the book on and I was like, ah!
It feels like, I mean, and I'm grateful to you because I mean, you're the reason. I mean, you've been hands, like supporting me since day one. And it just feels like, it doesn't feel like it's just for plain ice. It feels like, you know, I have spent the last few years like building something and working, you know, really hard. And it feels good to like, know that that time and energy like paid off in a way that like I was able to build my readership, connect with readers, and you know, coming from when The Return came out and it was like the first week of the pandemic, and it was like, well, I was like, I tried, like to get here, it felt really, really good. And yeah, it still hasn't quite sunk in yet, but it's, I mean, that's the thing about any achievement or any like milestone that you hit. Like, you still wake up the next day and I have to edit my next book. Like, you're still like, I'm still on that grind. Does
Yeah,
it,
the world continues turning.
yeah, it's very validating, but it doesn't change anything, you know?
No, that totally makes sense. Yeah, you're like, cool, I can add this to my bio, and now I have to go edit my next book.
You celebrate. I drank some champagne and now I'm back up in the morning, like, all right, I have to figure out how to fix this problem in the next book.
100%. Yeah, no, it is so well deserved. I mean, I always celebrate anytime one of my horror friends gets on any sort of list, but I was like this one, I was like, yes,
Oh.
what a win. What a win.
Yeah, it's a big win.
Man, I've been thinking a lot because of the nature of Play Nice, which is such a like the two sides of like girly demonic fun like possessed house and also like God forbid a woman has an opinion like right like all of that and I just keep thinking about this like I don't want to call it like a curse but this like being a woman in horror and like that being like the whole identity and it's like no, horror author
Yeah.
full stop. Like, right? Like, it. I see it so often where people are like, the best women horror writers. And I'm like, no, they're the best horror writers. They happen to be women.
Yeah, so I started a little, I accidentally started discourse on Threads like 2 months ago that was kind of related to this, and it's hard to articulate, and I do get sensitive about it, and I try my best to put it into words and like accurately describe how I'm feeling, but like I never want to like hurt anyone's feelings, because when you write a book and you put it out into the world, it's no longer your bit, like you can't control it anymore. What other people think of it is not your business. How other people categorize it, it's not your business. And being able to put a book into a category and describe it and recommend, like, that is so important. But there are labels that, like, I feel like don't quite fit, or like there's the cozy horror debate, which I believe cozy horror does exist. And I would say of my work, I think cackle does fit into that category. But like when I see somebody kind of describe such sharp teeth as cozy horror, for me, it kind of hurts my feelings because I'm like, and it's a deeply personal thing that like I just have to, as authors, you kind of have to just be like, it is what it is. But like
Sure.
that book is me processing trauma.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to hear people be like, oh, it's cute, when it's like, that was a really painful book for me to write. And like, it's doing work that I hope people don't relate to, but like, if it's there, if people need it.
Yeah.
But then you have terms like pink horror and like bubblegum horror and girly pop horror, and like they're fun.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say my work is not those things. I just don't really consider it. The place where I get a little bit like it makes me a little bit itchy when I think about it is I do write feminist horror, but I would say that like the Indian Lake trilogy is also in a way feminist horror,
Right.
and that work is not being described in this way. I think Grady writes feminist horror.
Yes.
His work is not being described that way for a particular reason. And I think those are brilliant works of feminist horror.
Yeah.
But those authors are not being pigeonholed in a way where it's like, well, they are feminist horror writers. And for me, it often feels like, well, she writes feminist horror, or she writes girl horror, or she, and like, I do, but that's not it. But like, I feel like we have to be very careful in general about how we rephrase things, because there's like some subconscious work going on when, and I think of it like with, oh, well, that's like, it's queer horror. Yes, but it's horror. Like,
It's
and
yes.
I think for us authors and for readers, it's important for them to feel like horror is expanding. It's in this like amazing, exciting place right now where the genre is expanding. There's all these new voices, and we want to keep calling people in and not alienating people by being like, well, that's not really horror, it's cozy horror. Or that's like, yes, it's good, but that's queer horror. Because I think then you're like elbowing people out of the space that like should be welcoming to everybody. And I'm sure I'm not doing the best job of articulating my feelings about it, but like that's sort of where I worry about those little subgenres and like putting people in those little areas. Because again, like one of the things that felt very validating about hitting the list was, it was like, yeah, I'm a horror writer, and I like, and this is where I'm at, and I've like worked really hard to be here, and I want other people, other women who are telling stories about women, and like unapologetically feminine stories, to know that you can succeed in horror, in the horror space, as by telling those stories. You can succeed in the horror space by telling your story, using your voice, and like, that's exciting and celebrate and should be celebrated. And like, not, we shouldn't put parameters on the genre that don't need to be there.
No, and like, I think as a bookseller, like, there are times when those kind of little categories, like the sub genres, can be helpful if I'm like making a display, right? But like, when I'm hand selling, like, if someone comes in looking for horror, I'm not like, do you want girly horror or like boy horror? You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm like, what do you want? Ghosts? Do you want demons? Do you want werewolves? Do you want vampire? Like, what is your vibe? And then I just go from there, and I'm very intentionally selecting authors of all genders, right? Like, because And like when you did your event at Gibson's, I'm sure you met some of my regulars who I handed them the return. I handed them Cackle back in the day, and now they pre-order all of your books, and it's a bunch of dudes who you would not expect to be like, you know, you they look like Stephen King bros, and I mean that with love. like I say that with love, but it's like there's this great phrase that I'm going to borrow from. There's this committee of for children's literature, and it's called the Windows and Mirrors Committee. And I'm going to borrow their phrase because I love it so much, where that committee looks at diverse children's books, and they highlight and celebrate books that serve as both a mirror to someone's experience who doesn't often get to see themselves in books, and as a window for people who have never experienced that to see another perspective, another way of living. And I think horror is very uniquely positioned to be like windows and mirrors into these other experiences because on the very surface level, you have ghosts and demons and all these horrific things. But at the core of most horror novels is this very real human experience. And I think when it comes to things like quote unquote feminist horror, I think it's important for people other than just the women who have experienced, like, you should smile more. Yeah, I know. Like, I think it's important for like the Stephen King bros to read that and be like, oh, damn. Right? Like, it's for everyone. Horror is for everyone. And yeah, so I get very defensive when if I like hand someone a book written by a woman and I watch them like flinch a little bit, I'm like, this is my husband's favorite book. And then they'll be like, oh, okay. I'm like, listen, you. It's good. Ah.
I do think, and I, for the first couple of years of my career, I was just like, anything I experienced, I was like, it's what it is. Like, just, but I think I've gotten to a point where I've noticed certain patterns of like my work being described in a way that I don't see my lovely dude friend's work being described, or I do see, like, you notice, when you're immersed in a genre, you notice patterns and language and things like that. And I think, we all just can be more conscious of it and how we speak about art. And I think horror, and it's our life. We love it so much. Like, I'm just particularly protective over it and feel pretty passionately about. We want to, the genre is expanding. And I think if we say to people, like, I got asked the question at, I did an event in Philadelphia with Adam Caesar, who I love. He's a brilliant writer, and his work is so fun and wonderful guy. But someone in the crowd asked me about would I consider my work horror or cozy horror. My husband was afterwards was like, he was like, because he knows how I feel about it. He was like, all of the blood left my body. I was like, how is she? He was like, I saw your face. And I was like, how is this gonna go? But I'd like tried to I try I like responded kind of similarly to what I just said. And she said, like, the reason afterwards I spoke to her, and I like throughout the whole thing, my response, I was like, I'm not like, I don't want you to feel like I'm glad you asked this question and I appreciate you, blah, blah, blah. I didn't want her to feel like I was yelling at her, even though I like got on a soapbox about it. But she said the reason was that she asked me was she's in like a horror book club, and like, some of the guys in that book club were saying, like, well, it's this, it's this, it's this. And so I think it's equally important for readers to feel like if you tell a if like somebody else in the genre says that's girl horror or that's cozy horror, then that the other reader might think, well, I only really like cozy horror, or I only really like girl horror. And then they're never going to find, pick up a Nat Cassidy book and be like, oh, no, I love all of it. And so I think horror is such a wide spectrum, and I think there's so much, there's something for everybody. And some people might just be like, yeah, I only like cozy. I only like small town, like everything's fine, like a little, like that's fine. But some people might like that and like, something and love like a Paul Tremblay book or Alexis Henderson, like, and they might not pick it up if you're just saying like, well, it's not actually horror. It's horror, but it's also this other thing. So it's a delicate balance of like, but then I've also like seen people say, I don't read horror, and somebody say, well, this is cozy horror. It's like, I think you'll like it. And that's an entry point for them. So it can be useful, but it like also can be limiting. So it's just like so tricky and slippery.
It's like it's an interesting, it's like all how you use it, right? Like there's a Sarah Pinsker book, Haunt Sweet Home. And I will often use the phrase cozy horror for that one because I'm like, it, when you're reading it, like it makes you feel cozy. And also there's ghosts. And I'm always like, this is, if you're dipping a toe in, start here and see what parts of it do you like, and then come back, and then I will have like your next stepping stones. And like, but to me, I'm like, if it's in my horror section, it's horror. Right? And so like I am honestly shocked that anyone would describe your books as cozy horror because my God.
All the time. Black sheep.
It's ridiculous.
Black sheep.
Black sheep. No.
But like, and I think that's like, but I also think there's a difference between like cozy and relatable. And I think like there's something about being like, well, I see myself reflected in this and it makes me feel a certain way. And so I'm fine with that. I think that where I get a little bit, like I've worked really hard at my craft and immersed myself in the genre. And I think it's one of those things where, again, it's like just at this stage in my career where I worked really hard to, because I want to be respected and taken seriously because this is my life's work. And pretty much like, on a Saturday night, I'm home, like, packing up books to send out to people I've met through Bookstagram, and like I'm like thinking about like, oh, like, well, maybe I'll like make hats for the people who blurb my book, like I'm kind of like I'll do stickers, like I'm always kind of like, even if I'm not sitting at my desk working, I'm thinking about work. And social media is like a whole other aspect of it. So like I wanted to be taken seriously. And I think this past with writing Play Nice, which is really a lot about perception and all of these things, I sort of got to this point where I realized like it doesn't really matter if like I dress a certain way, like if I button my shirt up to my neck like a nun, like it doesn't matter if I like wear makeup, don't wear makeup, do my hair, don't do my hair. Doesn't matter if I write the scariest book of all time. It doesn't matter if I like, I can't control whether people respect me or not. I can't control how other people perceive me or think of me or any of that. So like all I can do is like continue to work on my craft, be proud of the books that I put out, have fun, and be authentically myself. And like, I feel like kind of coming into that and realizing that, like, so like when I hit the New York Times, I didn't feel Like, it didn't feel at all like, well, they'll respect me. Like, I thought maybe at some point, like in my career, like if I was having a jaded moment or someone said something to me, like, well, someday. And then, but like by the time I hit the times, I was like, the people who don't respect me are not, they're going to look at this and be like, ah, it was a fluke. It was this, it was that. You know what I mean? Like, so
Yeah.
you really can't ever control that. And so, and like, again, like I think being a woman in a male-dominated space, or just being a woman in the world, I was always so afraid if I said no to something or if I reacted a certain way, people would just think I'm a bitch. And I was so terrified of that. And again, like I would have never voiced my opinion about like, I like cozy horror. Is it good? Is it not? Like, I never would have said anything because I'd be like, I don't want people to think I'm, or like somebody who likes it to disagree with me and then be like, well, she's a bitch. I'm like, but like you kind of get to this point where you're like, I'm not, I'm just sort of being this like muted version of myself because I'm so afraid of something that like doesn't even matter because it's gonna like happen no matter what. So I think it's been liberating. It was like very cathartic to write Play Nice in a way that was kind of unexpected for me, and to like write it at this stage in my career where I'm kind of like feeling the way where it's like, you know, people are gonna say what they're gonna say, and if someone wants to like call you crazy or a bitch or whatever, say you're this, say you're that, say this about you, we're like, okay, like I'm doing fine anyway. So
You're like, I'm done playing nice.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I really like I noticed that shift in your posting and stuff like that of like, I'm having fun. I'm living my life and like I don't care what you think about me. Like, here's me and I'm having a good time and I wrote this book and it's dope. And you should read it. That's
You like get to the, it's like hard to, and I also, I didn't have Instagram before the return. Like I made my Instagram for book purposes, but like I think it's always like awkward to find like in it for anybody, like the balance of like, what do I share? What do I not share? What do I like? And then as an author, you're like, how do I promote my books without like asking people like in this way that I feel that feels authentic and that also doesn't feel like, I don't know, like buy my book or else like books are expensive. So just finding that balance and having fun. And I think also like I did feel very self-conscious about like wanting to be taken seriously. And we were, I mean, you're younger than me, but we're around the same age. So like we grew up where, and I'm sure it's still like this, where there's a dress code, but it's pretty much just for the girls.
Oh, yeah.
And the spaghetti straps and the 2 finger length, the skirt's fingertip length, and your shirt has to be like, so I always like was like, all right, if I'm going into a male dominated space, I have to like dress a certain way and like behave a certain way, and kind of just being like, no, I don't really care. I'm gonna like wear my sparkly dress and like my crazy makeup, and like it's gonna be what it's gonna be, and like that's fine. So, yeah, I think that like that all sort of happened around the same time.
Yeah. And I love it. I love it. No, I particularly like I love that each book has its own like very specific vibe. And you know all the like lead ups to the books. Like it's always fun like having read it so early and watching like the little winks and nudges and I'm
Yeah.
like, I know what that means. I know
The
what that means.
smiley faces and the, yeah.
Oh my God, I know what that means. But I think this one has been the most fun, not just of the like kind of liberation, but also like just the girly demonic vibe. I want you to talk a little bit about the girly demonic vibe and what that look like. What's your Pinterest board look like for that?
I think I came up with it when I for cover they we do this thing called what is it, cover it's not cover 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 conference.
Okay.
And so my editor will email me and be like, what are you thinking? Like, what's your vision? And I will email back like a 2-page PowerPoint presentation. And on the first page, it's like, I'm thinking either this or, and then the second page that. And I think for the first one, I said like girly but demonic. And then I went, girly demonic. Like, that's kind of, and then when they sent the cover back to me, I was like, that's it. That's girly demonic. And I just because Cleo is such a fun character, and so like, and the book was also like inspired by like the aughts and the like how the media treated women in that era, and sort of reclaiming that style of like the Von Dutch, and so it was also like Brat Summer, like Von Dutch hats and like short sequin skirts and just like hyper feminine. And a little bit chaotic and evil because in that era and that time in the early 2000s, like women were judged so harshly and picked apart for everything they wore, their bodies, all of it. And like to be able to kind of like reclaim that fashion and like butterfly clips and glitter and all of that. In a way that's like, say what you want, I dare you. Like, felt like empowering and felt kind of like the right, for lack of a better word, vibe to like sort of give people an idea of like what the tone of the book was like. It doesn't always work out so perfectly, I think, with So Thirsty and with Play Nice. It's very convenient that I was like, this is the vibe. And like, this is like, here's kind of what the tone is going to be. And like, be able to kind of set that in the lead up to the book and sort of marketing the book and positioning the book. So it was really fun. And I think it was part of the book's success of being able to be like, this is kind of what you're going to get out of it. This is how it's going to feel. And like, it's supposed to be fun, but like it's still dark and edgy. And so the next book doesn't have a clean marketing pitch. So I'm like, how am I going to figure this one out? But that's a problem for me in a couple months.
Right, that's future
Future
Rachel's
me,
problem.
yeah.
Yeah, no, and it must be so interesting. Like with this one, it was very kind of like, yep, this is the vibe, like possessed house, like we got this. I was thinking about Black Sheep, and I was like, the promotion of that without giving away that early twist must have been really brutal to
Well,
be like.
it was really hard because and I had thought to keep originally the twist was on the back copy, and I was like, we can't, I don't want to talk about it. And so like I fought to like keep that off, and then I was on a major podcast and they brought it up, and I was like, what?
Oh no.
But like it was, I still meet people who will be like that, like who are like, I just read it and I wasn't expecting it. And I'm like, that's amazing that like a few years later, people are pick it up and they still have it. It hasn't been spoiled for them. So that's very heartening. But yeah, that book was very difficult to talk around, and I don't know if I will ever write another twist unless I think of the most genius twist of all time. I don't think I'm writing another twist because it's so hard to tell people like what you're getting into if they don't it without or like talk about the book in general when you're just talking about the small, when you're dancing around the biggest part about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I do have a lot of fun hand selling that one, keeping that spoiler. Like, I've never told anyone when I'm hand selling it. I'm just like, oh, you know, if you've got that religious trauma, like if you like cults, hey, you're gonna like this one. It's
It's a
really fun.
cult book.
It's a cult book. And I love that because that it hit me so hard. Like, I think I like messaged you. I was like, oh my God. Like, because again, like reading it like immediate, like the day it shows up on Edelweiss, and I'm like, it's just like I want other people to have that, right? Like, so, but yeah, I was like thinking about your marketing and like the way you kind of tailor your social media for each book, and I was just like trying to think back to that one, and I was like, oh my God, like that was such a hard secret to keep, but like you did, and we still get people who are surprised, so that's fun.
I think I've gotten like I think I've been able to like get better at the marketing and like figuring out how to position the books and how to like connect with readers and be like, okay, this is kind of what you can expect. This is like, it's this one's particularly scary or this one's just like a fun ride or so. But again, like next, this it'll be interesting for the next book because it's not as easy to be like girly demonic. Like there's not like a fun phrase. So
Well, you'll get there. You'll figure it
yeah,
out.
figure
You
it
always
out.
do. Yeah, no, I so I've read Play Nice twice now. I read the very, very early copy, and then I did the audiobook, which was incredible. Oh
Yeah, I've
my
heard good things.
God, it was so good. And like, I listen to a lot of audiobooks, and I'm very forgiving of narrators, especially because I often listen at like 2x. So I'm like, I'm not here to judge a narrator. Like, but oh my God, she did so good. And there's two, because Cleo's mom has her own narrator. And I was like, oh, this
When they
is
told
so
me that, I was
cool.
like, yes, because
It's
I've only ever
so
had
cool.
one, so I was like, yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And my coworkers have been listening to it. And so I've been getting a lot of middle of the night texts that are just like, oh my God, I love Cleo. And I'm like, I know, me
Oh,
too.
that makes me so happy.
She's the best. You write such amazing characters. Like, I feel like I know all of your characters so well, so personally, and not even just the main characters. But all of your characters are so rich in personality. Is like, what is your like process, I guess, for like, how do you build a character? Do they just kind of come to you, or do you have like a formula that you like go through and you're like, this is their backstory? Like,
So typically, I start with my protagonist, and then everyone else gets built out from there because I write close first person. And so, like, I'll come up with the concept of the book, and then I'm like, who's the person who needs to tell this story? What's their arc? What's their like character arc going to be within the story? And then kind of build everyone out from there. So, like, Cleo, I knew she was going to have all of these traits that historically, women are not allowed to have, like she's like, or that they get judged very harshly for. So she's going to be bratty and self-confident and superficial and promiscuous and all of these things that, like, and it's going to be like, judge her, I dare you. Like, that's how the book is going to be. Just because I'd written so many characters before and they were always unlikable. And I was like, oh, I'll craft a character who challenges that word. And then everybody else, like, so she's going to be the youngest of three sips. So then Daphne's the middle child. And then, so I'm going to give her the generic middle child traits of being appeasing and like not wanting drama and being like, and an overachiever, but like in a quiet way. And then Lita, the oldest, is going to be like typical eldest daughter, like super overachiever, super type A, like, and then kind of everybody gets built out from there. And for So Thirsty, it was like, okay, the character needs to tell this story, needs to be in like a rough place and kind of like not really living, just like going through the motions. Like, who's her best friend going to be? Somebody who's the complete opposite, who's going to like drive her to like come out of it. So it's always like opposing forces with my protagonist. So, the character, like, character doesn't, the only character who really gave me a hard time was Vesper from Black Sheep, because I knew what she was before I knew who she was.
Oh,
And so
interesting.
that was like interesting to find the like what kind of overshadowed the who. And then my agent was like, what if she like worked at like Applebee's? And I was like, bingo, I know exactly who she is.
There
And then so
it is.
but yeah, character, some characters are going to be louder than others. Like I always say, I have my sad sack characters and then like my sassy characters, because depending on the story I'm going to tell, like for Such Sharp Teeth, it required a character who was already had her shit together and was confident, so I could rock her world and bring her down a peg. And kind of same for Cleo, and I'd throw Vesper in there too. And then I have my sad sacks like Elise and Annie and Sloane, who kind of like start off in this like rough place where they're like really going through it. And then they are really going through it because I do whatever I do to them and torture them. And then they have to come out on the other side. So the character then in the next book, in the book I'm writing now in Kiss, Play, Replay, she's a sad sack. Her name's Willa, and she's sarcastic and all that, but she's not like, she does not have her shit together. So it's like, but again, like I come up with my protagonist, the right voice to tell the story, to get the message across, the theme, and then everybody else is kind of built off of that protagonist.
I love that. And with every book, I just find myself relating more and more and more, like with the characters. I'm always just like, oh, I have a family member like that. Oh, I do that. Oh, yep. I am in this. I think the character who took me most by surprise in Play Nice, rightfully so, was Cleo's mom, because my whole like initial read through, I was comparing her to my own narcissistic alcoholic mother who I don't speak to. And so I just was like, yeah, okay, check that box. That's who that is. And so then it was like finishing that book and then doing the reread and being like, she is such a complex character. And I fully did the thing that we do where I just wrote her off as this one note thing. And then there's more. There's so much more. And yes, she makes bad choices, but why? And I was like, oh, Rachel, you, you did it.
I do think like it's difficult. We bring our own experience to everything and to everyone, and like that's a totally fair reading of Alex. But like when I was writing her, I was coming from a place again, like being inspired by like Britney Spears' story and Jessica Simpson's stories. But I think Britney is a little bit. I would like listen to both of their memoirs and watch the Britney doc, and just like kind of sitting in my feelings about like the aughts and like Anna Nicole Smith and like the Janet Jackson Super Bowl thing, like all of that stuff. For Alex, I was thinking a lot about like those starlets and imagining that like on the worst day, on my worst day, the worst day of my the never been lower, like the worst day of my life, if there were like 40 strangers outside with cameras trying to get a picture, knowing that they would get a picture and that picture would be posted on the front of a magazine, being like, she's the worst. And then everyone would read it and be like, she's the worst. And so I think Alex Whether or not she's a good person is not a call that like I can make,
Right,
but
yeah.
I don't think she is a good mother. I don't think she makes terrible decisions. I do think she has a substance abuse issue. Like that was intentional. That was something that as I was writing, I was like, she's an alcoholic. She has a lot of issues that she should fix. But I think even if we give her, even without the benefit of the doubt, and saying that she's like a terrible person or made terrible choices, whatever, does that mean she doesn't deserve empathy? I think
Right.
that was the thing that I was like, I don't think she intentionally harmed her daughters. I
Right.
think, she was right about some of the things, not to spoil anything, but she was right about some of the things that she was saying. And like, I think she deserves empathy. And it was the same for Cleo. Like, I want to write these challenging characters, and I want them to be challenging because I want the reader to have to work to empathize with
Yeah.
them. Because I think like Brittany made a lot of bad choices too, but like she was in a lot of bad circumstances. So
Yeah.
like thing I didn't want it to be neat or clean. And like it's funny because my editor will always be like, so like who's the villain? Like I'm always like, the villain is society. And like I'm always like, it's this abstract thing because like I don't like
Yeah.
to I have a really hard time just writing a character who's just pure evil because I don't, in my everyday life, I don't come across many people who I'm like, you're evil. I come across a lot of people who I'm like, we have a lot of differences. You're making bad decisions. This is that. You're doing something bad. Like, you're a narcissist or like,
Yeah.
or whatever. You see things this way. You're stubborn. What? But like, I think that is more interesting to me as a human being and as a writer than somebody who's just like, I'm evil.
Yes.
That's not interesting to me. That's
Yeah.
one note,
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I found her really interesting, and I found like my own reaction to her really interesting. I was like, "Oh, look, I did what society does."
I think it's fair. I think to an extent it's fair.
And then yeah, obviously I love our demon friend. I love a demon.
I
Just.
think this demon, I wanted to create like a good foil for Cleo. And again, like everything in the book kind of like stems from the protagonist. I wanted Cleo and the demon to have some things in common.
Yeah.
And like one to kind of keep the question and the ambiguity to a certain extent of like the behavior is kind of similar. Like they both seem to like be kind of obnoxious and they both kind to be like a little cheeky and all that. But yeah, it was fun to create a like nefarious entity. I'd never really done that before. That like doesn't really have much of a speaking role. Does a couple of things, makes a couple of doodles, and then kind of says hey and dips out. Like the demon is a supporting character, but a heavy presence.
Oh my God, like I was cracking up at the no with the smiley face, and I was like, that's something Cleo would do, like that she just does that. She's like, no.
My
Art.
favorite,
No.
my favorite demon note is like Alex, the mother, is describing how hideous the demon is, and it just like responds with like three frowning faces where it's like,
Yeah, it's just it's great. It's so fun.
It's like, well, fuck you very much.
Right? Come on, man.
Rude.
He's
like,
Rude.
it's the most hideous being on earth. And he's just like, well,
How dare
how
you?
dare you?
Look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
You haven't brushed your hair in 3 days.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh, let's see. What else do I have in my notes? One of my notes is just what good documentaries have you been watching?
Speaking of narcissistic mothers, did you watch?
I
Yeah.
do know where
So
you're going with this.
here's the thing. I saw a trailer for it and was like, that seems like the kind of like small town scandal doc that like perfect for a Friday afternoon after a hard day of edits. I'm going to turn this on, turn my brain off. I did not know what happened to in the story or where it went. And I think I like posted about watching it. And then I watched it and was like, what's it called? It's
It's like
unknown
the
number,
catfish, yeah, unknown
unknown
number, the
number,
catfish,
catfish.
something, yeah.
And I was, it's not a well-made documentary by any means, but like it's a riveting subject matter.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm trying to think what other documentaries I've watched lately. I love a good documentary. There's a series coming out. So one of my favorite shows that was short-lived that like I watched like 15, 16 years ago, I caught the first episode during a cross-country road trip when I was staying in a motel. It's called Celebrity Ghost Stories.
Ooh.
And it's like, it's some B-list celebrity who's like, but they're all like, they're actors, so they're very good. They're like so good at telling stories. They're like in a chair in like a dark room telling the story, and then there's a reenactment. So they'll be like, I stayed in this hotel and I saw a ghost at the end of, and you're like, oh, but like, I don't know. It's so good because of the like storytelling and the reenactments. And I like I Survived is also like that. Have you ever seen I Survived?
Yeah.
So like that format, something about that format I find very riveting. And so I saw Netflix has a show coming out on like Thursday this week. That's that style. It's not celebrities, but it's just like people who are telling, like it's called like, I don't know, true hauntings or whatever, but
Sure.
somebody being like, this happened to me, and then there's a
Oh,
reenactment. I love it. I also love Radio Rental. Have you ever listened to that podcast?
ooh, no.
It's like, it's again, it's like people telling scary stories that like really happened to them. But like, it's like Rainn Wilson plays this like video rental store guy. I usually
Hate you
just
say.
fast forward through all that just to get to the story. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know if that counts as a documentary. Have
Yeah.
you been watching any good docs?
The last one I watched was the unknown number one, and I just was like, say, I was like, what is happening?
Wild.
Holy delusions. I can't even, yeah. Anyone who hasn't watched it, just do yourself a favor. Just do it. Just,
Yeah.
my God. It's like you said, it's not well made. It's insane the way they set it
Yeah.
up, but holy moly, what a story.
Yeah. If you're like, damn, I'm having it rough. Put on that documentary for some perspective because you will be like, whatever I've got going on is not that bad.
Yeah, at least it's not that.
That.
Oh man, yeah, no, I'm deep in my 31 Nights of Halloween, so that's taking up all of my free
Yeah.
time.
What are you watching tonight?
I don't know. I started watching Annabelle last night and I fell asleep. Which was no fault of the movie. I just, worked a 12-hour book festival
Yeah.
and was sleepy.
Yeah.
So I might finish that, but I don't know. I'm very like a lot of people make their lists ahead of time. They're like, "Oh, I'm gonna watch this on this day," and I'm just like, "I'm gonna scroll through and see what looks
And see, yeah, see
good."
what.
It just, I try to do a mix of like old favorites and also like what came out this year that I just haven't seen yet, or like what's this Shudder original that looks halfway decent. And so it's very much, I'm a mood watcher.
Have you seen Ugly Stepsister?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yes.
I'm trying
I
to think.
liked that
Have
one.
you seen Dead Talent Society?
I don't know if I saw that one.
So it, I think it's on Netflix. It's funny. I don't know if you do like horror comedy or you
Oh, yeah.
just stick to. I'm sure it's still on Netflix. I think it was. It's in Mandarin, so
Nice.
subtitles, but
I love a
totally
subtitle.
fine. I think it's on Netflix. Yeah, it's on Netflix. You
Nice.
should watch Dead Talent Society.
Okay.
It's a like horror comedy, a lot of heart, and it's great. Yeah, so
Amazing.
add that to your list.
I will. I will. My kids have been petitioning to join my 31 Nights of Halloween, which I have a list of like the kid appropriate
Yeah.
like animation horror Paranorman and things like
Yeah.
that. And the other morning, Cordy, who's 8, was like, "I want to watch Terrifier." And I was like, "Girl, no."
Where did that come from?
What are you saying to me right now? And she was like, because I have this blanket that has all these like horror characters on
Okay.
it. So she'll like point out and be like, who is this? What's their story?
Okay.
Whatever. So she knows a lot of villains. And she was like, well, but he's just like a silly, goofy guy and he has a lot of passion for what he does. And I was like, listen,
She's not wrong.
you're not wrong. It is so gory. You
Yeah.
cannot. I would be a bad mom if I let you
Let you
watch
watch that. Yeah.
Terrifier. Like she just was like, she was really trying. She was pulling out all of her little debate tactics. I was like, no,
I
no.
love the idea. He's very passionate at what he does.
She's like, he's passionate about what he does. He likes what he does. I'm like, yeah, that's true.
It
No
is
one has
true.
more fun than art. Like he
Yeah.
loves his job. But no, you can't. Like there's
That's so
no,
funny.
like girl,
Yeah.
no.
So that's a lot for me.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, listen, even I'm not old enough for Terrifier. Like I watch it, but
Yeah.
it's too much. And she's like, okay, what about Scream? Cordelia. I was like, maybe next year.
Trying to think if there are like ones that are. I like got to last year, I went to two different film festivals and it was like the best. I'm so spoiled.
That's
This
so
year, I'm not
fun.
going to any. But so I got to see like Dead, that's where I saw Dead Talent Society. And Dead Male is really good too. That's on Shudder.
I think that's in my queue. I think I have
That
that
one is
saved.
really good.
Nice.
And then Presence is good, but I wouldn't describe Presence as like a horror movie. But that's a good movie. That's not like a Halloween-y, I would say that one. But if you're looking for X, those are my two X. Dead Talent Society and Dead Male.
Nice, nice. Check, check.
I was trying to think if I saw any like kid appropriate ones. I think Dead Talent Society probably like at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them I'm like, when you're like 10, you can watch
Hit
like
the
these
double digits and then we'll
ones.
talk. Yeah.
Yeah, 'cause I'm like, girl, there's so much kid horror that you just haven't seen
Yeah.
yet. Like you can't skip the
No, you have
foundation.
to.
You
Yeah.
have to work your way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's so funny. She just takes such pride in being the spooky kid that she just like wants to, you
Apple doesn't fall
know, be like
far.
exactly. And then I have Fina, who's just like, I'm a unicorn sparkle princess. And I'm like, yes, you are. Yes, you are. Atta girl. But yeah, no, it's just, ugh, it was so funny. I was like,
Do you know what
no.
they're going to be for Halloween this year?
So Fina's going as a Paw Patrol character
Okay.
because sure, she saw the costume in Spirit Halloween and she was like, that one. And I was like, yeah, that tracks. And then Cordy, I think, is going as a bat. I think that's her.
Ooh.
Yeah. So That's her. She was like trying to figure out if they make like the really nice vampire teeth that are like caps for your teeth that you actually like mold to them. She was like, "Do they make those for kids?" And I was like, "No." And she was like, "Why?" It's like, I don't know, chemicals? I don't
Your teeth fall out.
your teeth fall out, they change size. Like, I don't know, man. They just don't. She was like, "Well, I don't want to wear the plastic ones." And I was like, "Me neither." She's like, "I guess you can just paint them on my face." And I was like,
You go.
"Okay." Yeah, but yeah, they're very, very excited for Halloween. They've been digging through all the Halloween decorations and picking things out, but
Oh.
everywhere. Very cute.
It's
I'm like,
time. It's October
it is
5th.
time. It's time. We have a lot of stuff outside. We have a lot of stuff that's just up all year. Like,
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, we just have like skeletons around,
Yeah,
and
as one does.
they have a rubber black cat that we got at Spirit Halloween like 5 or 6 years ago that Cordy named Polka Dot. And Polka Dot is just a member of the family. And one time Polka Dot came to the beach with us, and that was a very funny experience. I was like, I hope he doesn't melt.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't. He was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll be around after Polka Dot. It'll be around after the rest of us are gone. That's
Exactly. Polka Dot's not going anywhere.
anyway.
Polka Dot, we're gonna have to put Polka Dot in the will to
Yeah.
like pass on through the generations. So yeah, we have the Halloween house, and they just love that. Cordy had a Halloween themed birthday party last year, which was really fun. Yeah. So, it's tis the season. It is like,
It's
it's our
the season
time.
indeed. Yeah, it is. It's our time.
It's our time. But let's see. One more question before I free you. Good books you've been reading lately. Anything you want to shout out?
So I'm currently reading The Macabre by Kosako Jackson.
My God, did you see that the dust jacket does the thing? I lost my mind when I saw that.
It's a beautiful book. It's really riveting. Like the plot is just moving.
Awesome.
I also was reading One Bad Night, which is the short story collection that Aardvark put out for
Ooh.
their 3-year anniversary. I have a story in that, but that's not why. Like I'm reading it because I got it because I have a story in it, but I'm reading it because all of the authors in it are like incredible.
Yay.
So, and it's like a solid. It was like I'm reading the collection. I was like, I should have really stepped up my game because like the stories are so good.
Oh, I love that.
So that's really good. And then what books that are coming out next year that I recommend, because I'm always reading. I had a bad reading year this year, but some two standouts. Well, I loved Our Winter Monster by Dennis Mahoney.
Yeah.
The two books that I re read that are coming up next year, Greedy by Callie Kazemi, which is sort of like Top Chef meets Parasite. Like, I don't it's
Nice. Okay.
and then Nothing Tastes as Good by Luc Dumas,
Ooh, okay.
which is like if Ozempic was super evil.
Amazing.
So those are both really good books that are coming out in 2026.
Amazing. I know it's wild that we're already reading
Yeah.
2026 books. Like, people are always like, "Oh, what have you read recently?" I'm like, it won't be here for 8 months.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, you experience the same thing where you're like, I'm always ahead and always behind.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
Like, things come out and I'm like, oh no, I have an arc of that that I haven't read
Read
yet.
yet.
And then,
Yeah.
but also I'm reading a year in advance and I'm just
Yeah.
like, ah.
It's hard. It's hard. But I'm starting to feel like this was not a good reading year for me. And I'm starting to like feel excited about reading again. So,
Yeah. Yeah. We have our reading slumps. It
yeah.
happens. It's
Yeah.
honestly like, I feel like you need the slump sometimes to let your brain recover
Yeah.
so that then you can like
Yeah.
come back into it. Like I look at my reading patterns, and there are like certain months when I'm like, oh my God, I read like 15 books this month. And then the next month I read three. And I'm like, okay, all right. There's
Yeah,
ups and downs.
it was a slow year, but I'm hoping I'll get back into it next year. So.
Yeah. Well, you also were like moving and stuff, and you've been like
Yeah, I
busy.
did. Yeah, I sold a house, moved, finished a book, wrote a new book.
So
It's
like
been,
you have excuses for Yeah, but oh man, good times. Well, Rachel, thanks for hanging out.
Always. I love hanging out with you. Thank you for having me on every year. And I'll keep hustling on this next one so we can hang out at the same time next year.
And we'll get you back to Gibson's at some point.
Yes, next year for sure.
Because that was so much fun.
It's sad the timing didn't work out this year, but next year for sure.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. And we ended up being crazy busy this October anyway, so
Yeah,
like
your
it's
schedule was
okay.
crazy. I wish I could pull a Clay and be like, I'm gonna drive up and drive back in
I'm just
one
gonna
day.
show up.
But like
No.
whatever magic that man runs on, I don't have any.
He, God love him. He does too much. I'm like, slow down. You don't have to come to everything. It's okay.
He's
Like it's.
like a tooth fairy, but instead of collecting teeth and leaving money, he just comes and delivers horror joy.
This is true. I see him more than some of my local authors.
Yeah.
I'm like, calm down, my friend. It's
If he can
okay.
do it, if he can make that drive, all good on him.
He'll do it. But yeah, no one should do as much travel as that guy. God love him. Amazing. Well, best of luck with all of the edits and
Thank
copy
you.
edits and figuring out the vibes
Thank
and
you.
all
Thank
of
you.
that. I believe in you. And enjoy spooky season.
You too. I'll talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
The biggest thanks to Rachel Harrison for joining me once again on the podcast. Play Nice is available now from Gibson's Bookstore, and I'll put that link in the show notes. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload a new episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye.